And suppose that most of us are so busy trying to keep up with contemporary situations that we are losing track with some of the wisdom of the past. And this is particularly true in the study of the invisible aspects of the human personality. I think we might remember that Ptolemy of Alexandria was the first great astronomer, astrologer of the Western worlds. And he is the one that gave us what is called the Ptolemaic system of astronomy. In this system, the Earth was placed in the center of the solar system. And above and below were three planets above and three below. The result was carried by flood into music to give us the octave. Nearly all these ancient beliefs have survived in some form or other, but changed in aspect because the principles remain the same forever. And in this particular case, we are studying the composition of the human being. And our particular problem this morning is to deal with these emotional potentials. So we consider the human being as composed of four elemental structures. These are according to the lower figure in the scale of Ptolemy: the moon, the Mercury, Venus, and the sun. Now these are divided along a line of an intangible but very real structure, which results in the production of the four stages of human life: birth, growth, emotion, and thought. These correspond to the planets. They correspond definitely with Ptolemy's system, and they are the basis of the Rosicrucian systems as expounded by Paracelsus and the Rosicrucians, Flood and Meyer and others. So this morning we want to study a little bit about this problem of the relationship between the human being and the lower half of the Ptolemaic universe. And in order to do this, we have to start in and divide the system into four levels, one above the other. The lowest level being under the moon, the second level being under Mercury, the third under Venus, and the fourth under the sun. These are the latter steps, the four steps of the Eleusinian rites, up which the individual has to ascend in evolution over a period of millions of years, and another kind of immediate appearance in the embodiment which he occupies at the present time. But these steps are represented in our own individual birth patterns. Birth in physical existence comes first. This is under the Earth, or this planet Earth. Then comes the moon, governing the mysterious elements of growth. Then Mercury, and finally, we will come to the sun. But in each of these, patterns, we have a factor that we have to bear in mind, for these also are the kingdoms of nature around us. We have the mineral kingdom, which goes to the symbol of earth. We have the oceans, which go to the symbol of water. We have these volcanoes and the natural fires, heats of life, which come to contact with the element of fire. And we finally have the airy principle, which corresponds to the mind. So these four represent the levels upon which the human being functions, and up as a ladder he climbs from birth to maturity. The ladder has its lowest rung on the moment of his birth, and this ladder ends on his coming of age, his 21st year. Now what happens in the interval between these two? First he is born, he gets here. Sometimes it's a more pleasant appearance than others, but he comes in under the element of earth. He then goes into growth under the element of water. He goes into emotion and things of that nature under the element of fire. And he comes to his mental maturity under the element of air. So that the four elements become a ladder again. Now, in the Rosicrucian system, we find a fifth element called Azoth. This is symbolized in an old engraving as a substance concealed in the hilt of the sword of Paracelsus. And very often in pictures of him, he's shown with this sword and this inscription. So this represents the fifth element, the quintessence, as it was called, which constitutes also the symbol of the transmutation of metals, or the transmutation of the lower to create the higher or the more divine. Now, when we go into the individual's life, we find that from the first beginning of life, he goes through a recapitulation of the mineral evolution of the planet. He then passes to the water evolution in the second period of life. And then when he comes to maturity, he comes to the air period. In between water and air, he passes through the fire level. Now, his earth period begins at birth and extends while the body is being concreted in the womb. At birth, it enters into the humid principle of water. And in this principle is what is called growth. Here we find everything is concentrated upon the evolution and maintenance of the body and the symbols and energies within it. From about the 10th to 15th year, maybe, we find the gradual development of the water factor, the lymphatic factor, and the glandular structure in man. The fire symbol takes over in adolescence and carries up to the beginning of the period of maturity. Now, the fire principle is the one we're particularly interested in today. And this principle is very well described in the ancient writings. The principle of fire consists of two different forms or kinds, heat and light. Also, in the study of things, the mineral kingdom is under the symbol of earth. The various vegetations are under water. And the animal kingdom is under fire, or is part of the emotional structure. It is therefore in the period between about the 12th year and the 21st year that the human being passes through the control of the fire principle. He must face it, and he calls it growth, he calls it unfoldment or maturing, but he is under a tremendous pressure of emotional tension. This is part of the world in which he is now functioning. Now, these worlds don't exist just within himself. They are parts of levels of the body of the planet itself. The planet itself has seven different bodies, and these bodies are found in various patterns in the solar system, and also in part in the construction of man, who is gradually growing up in the solar system and has now reached the fourth level of solar development. So we have the person in this particular period we now consider this morning under the element of fire. Now, this is not fire as we see it in burning in the grate. It is cosmic fire. It is psychological fire. It is psychic fire. But it is a tremendous emotional urge. Fire becomes equated with emotion and emotional tensions. And in the world around us, the fire kingdom is the animal kingdom. So that the animal kingdom is, in a sense, recapitulated in the adolescence of the human being. Something has been added because the human being will go on to the next higher level, but the animal must wait. But in the meantime, we have to bear with the fact that in the period of adolescence, the human being is struggling to take over and control one of the most important of all of his vehicles, a vehicle which he almost always takes for granted, but which is giving him a great deal of trouble in these troubled times that we live in now. The emotional nature of the human being is the root of most of the difficulties which humanity is suffering from. And yet this same emotion gives us great art, great music, makes us humanitarians, dedicates us to truth, and does all kinds of wonderful things. But at the same time, uncontrolled and undirected, it becomes a matter of considerable worry. We know back in the medieval periods when the problem of witchcraft and sorcery was important, that at that time it was said that the so-called astral plane was a wonderful world, a beautiful garden, magnificent flowers growing everywhere in profusion, a place that looked like heaven. But around the stem of every flower was twisted a poisonous snake. This is a curious simile, but there's something to it. For it has to do with gratification of desire, the development and struggle to control the individual's desires. If they control him, the snake is twisted around every one of the emotional flowers. If he can control himself, then these become the great emotional hopes, love, faith, charity, and all the things that we most long for. Now, it's also obvious to most people, I think, that today, that we are not, as a human creation, completely graduated from the fire world. We are supposed to be entering into the air kingdom, but this is the mind, and there are not in many places that we find mind actually in control of the fire element. In the fire element, we have ambition. We have all the mysterious habits and tricks which are coming out every day in dissipation and in the deterioration of our moral code. So while we are passing through a perfectly normal circumstance, for it is part of the great plan of nature to which we all belong, the problem is now at the moment that we're not passing through very rapidly. We are more or less stuck in it. We have not yet reached the point where we can perceive that there are two aspects to this fire nature. The so-called desire or astral body consists of two different levels, the lower desires and the higher. The lower desires are very physical, temporal, selfish, and craven criminal. But the higher desires are the transformation or transmutation of the emotional nature from its material aspect to its spiritual and mystical phase or development. So we have this morning to consider something of this particular situation. We have to face certain facts. We have to face that we belong to a kingdom of more or less vegetable life. That was the primitive humanity. Primitive humanity we have practically no record of, except their bones in the earth, because they belong to a time long gone. But we know we grew up through them in one way or another. But in that period of time, survival itself was the particular of the entire problem. We were developing along the same lines as plants, flowers, and all kinds of vegetation. In that period came the great trees that live for 5,000 or 6,000 years, and also little bushes and shrubs that perish in a few hours. Therefore, this growth problem had to do with the second phase of our nature, which we have passed through, and has incorporated growth into the third pattern, which is the emotional or desire nature. This desire nature then becomes a dominant factor in our various aptitudes and efforts. Beginning with the adolescent process, the individual begins to develop social consciousness. Social consciousness is a step above absolute dedication to self-survival alone. Plants survive because they have no other way to go. They know nothing else. But beginning with the higher kingdoms and coming on into humanity, we find that there are moral values. Even certain of the animal kingdoms are under a strict morality. And little by little, the development of the emotions must be brought under the control of the will, or under the control of the inner life of the person. Now, where is that inner life? that inner light is locked. It is locked within this structure of bodies. It is so locked that in its original and complete form, we are never aware of it. The only way we have awareness is through a certain psychic overtone that comes to us and bestows upon us the great moral codes of the world. Therefore, in our particular problem this morning, we want to study a little bit this problem of the astral light, of the mysteries of the world of eternal illusions leading inevitably to reality. All emotions might be considered to be part of the initiation system of the ancient mysteries. The primary mysteries of antiquity were concerned with the three steps which bring the person up to his own maturity. When he is born completely, he is born with the mind. But up to that time, he has to function by the laws of nature around him, by the traditions of his forebears, and by the reaction which he himself feels to the various pressures and tensions and stress of existence. So the three initiation rites of the ancient mysteries brought the individual to the step of door of maturity, which he had to pass through himself. The fire of instruction comes first. He has to pass through, as listed in the magic flute of Mozart, he has to go through the initiations of the elements. And this is what we all have to do, whether we know it about it or not. Initiations of the elements, when we have reached our stage, we are assumed to have mastered three of the elements. The fourth is yet to come, and the fourth will be mastering the element of mind, or air. In the meantime, we are supposed to have outgrown the pressures of the three lower elements. We haven't actually done this, however. These elements are still active. We have not outgrown them, but we are beginning to feel a tremendous pressure of permitting them to continue when they're supposed to be outgrown. In the higher animal kingdom, we find there is the beginning of a kind of community existence. The various animals have their territories, their areas, they have their kind, they have their responsibilities. It is the female that bears the cubs, and it is the male that feeds them. All of these things are part of natural law, and each of these animal kingdoms guards its domains with a tremendous, almost fanatical intensity. That is because the idea of it all comes from within itself. It is therefore its own survival. Now, up to the point of the individuality of these kingdoms, they are under group consciousness. Therefore, animals are estimated according to groups and are rewarded and punished according to groups and not by individual creatures. But the animal kingdom, drifting on into the human world, begins to produce some very curious and somewhat threatening appearances. After we get to the point of the human state as we know now, we are supposed to have controlled and disciplined the emotions. Unless the mind curbs and directs action, emotions then take over. And if emotions fail, as sometimes they may do in the case of dissipation of one kind or another, then the guardianship passes back to the vegetable kingdom. And if that also fails, nothing remains but the mineral kingdom, and the physical body sinks back into the earth from which it came. So all of this is part of a ladder. It's a very carefully organized structure. I looked around a good deal among various texts dealing with these matters and find very little coverage. There is something happening that people don't really give much attention to, and yet it is very important. We look upon the past as more or less old-fashioned and think we're outgrowing these things. But one thing we have to learn sometime is that no one can outgrow integrity. The only thing he can do is grow up to it, because integrity represents a peak. In each kingdom, there is a peak. In each species of animal, there is a peak. Every mineral has one. They're all like minerals in the earth, human beings on the deserts and plains, all tied together into one system of growth, each on its own level of function, each recapitulating the past and reaching up towards the future. And this situation has to go on in a properly organized manner. So we are now at a time in our problems where we can remember a little bit of the magic and sorcery of the Middle Ages and the sorceries that led previous nations into a series of tragic difficulties. We are now in an emotional period of growth where we are gradually coming out of the validity of emotion. There was a time when we had no other pattern. The animal was simply an emotional creature. It was governed by laws. It had no rules in our kingdom, but it had rules in kingdoms of its own. And animals were gradually growing. And as they grew more and more, they began to develop internal phases of mental consciousness. But until they passed over a certain threshold, they did remain as animals. And as animals, they grew more and more intelligent. There where we have animals of great intelligence. We have animals that are very wise and careful, thoughtful, faithful. And we have many animals that serve man gloriously and joyously. Because actually, the animal gains part of its evolution by associating with something superior to itself. And man gets a bad setback when he starts associating with things that are less than himself. And in this case, we refer to members of his own kingdom. Actually, therefore, we have a problem of the development of community or social existence. One of the magicians that was famous in the Middle Ages wrote out very definitely the picture of these mysteries. First of all, he pointed out that nearly all psychic phenomena is involved in this mystery of fire. Psychic phenomena is largely a matter of delusion, fantasy, or the incredibilities of things. Emotional delusion populates the invisible side of life with all kinds of strange worlds. Beautiful worlds, summer lands, magnificent gardens, places of rest and relaxation. And then another religion comes in and points out that this other world is a mass of terrors, of horrors, and that if you don't belong to the right church, you're lost. All of this is part of this emotional struggle in which the person is trying to get hold of the integrities of his own nature. And with him, the emotional nature is a constant challenge to his ethics, to his integrities, to his proper decisions. And wherever his decisions are not up to the level of his proper evolution, they turn on him and cause tragic difficulties. We have now a world around us of persons who would like to believe that they are living in a mental universe, which would be the next step. They are not living in the mental universe, however, until constructive, creative mentality dominates conduct. Until the mind has discovered honesty, it cannot control correctly the conduct of any creature. It cannot control by taking over through tyranny any system of life. It cannot scheme its way into growth or progress. It cannot gain its ends by nefarious means without suffering. So we have in the problem of today an emotional universe which is still tied to its appetites very strongly. And in this matter is very much in harmony with many of the animal kingdoms, some of which also have high ethics, incidentally. But the problem of the human being is that he is now supposed to be moving triumphantly from the level of his emotions to the level of his mind. So he has two processes. One is to transmute the less, and the other is to grow up to the greater. in order to handle the emotional factor, it is necessary either to transmute the lower emotions or to create new levels of intellection or levels of emotional idealism to transmute these more negative factors. The alchemists knew this system and they call it transmutation. Every factor, every faculty, every part of the human being must be under constant growth. While the human being is living in the animal kingdom, the body will be on that level. But the moment he begins to aspire, the body must catch up with him. The moment he begins to aspire, the mind must reach down and pull him up a little. These factors all work together. It is a commonwealth of cooperation between the various natures of man. The mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and the human are in cooperation. They are producing the creature that we see today and call man. They are part of a great evolving pattern which is going on regardless of what we do to it, but is constantly aware. We're constantly aware of the dangers. Now, among the dangers that confronts the emotional orientation is self-interest. The individual finds that the most ignoble of his emotion is selfishness. And while he is selfish, the emotional nature cannot be free, cannot go forward, and cannot continue on its journey to meet the challenge of the mind. The mind in a selfish person is not mature. Therefore, it is not the proper leader. The proper leader is the redeemed and constructive emotional nature, which gradually grows to the fullness of itself. And when is the fullness of itself is reached, it is then advanced to the mental level. But until man's emotional nature is honest, his thoughts will never be honorable. He will never be able to transcend the internal compromises of his own thinking and emotions unless he disciplines this instrument which has been given to him. So most of the systems of the ancients disciplined the emotional life. They placed certain restraints upon it, and these restraints were regarded as religious training or philosophical disciplines. They were very important in their own way, and they continue to be important and always will be. Now, if we have this problem to confront, let's think a minute about what we are talking about in action. We are talking about the individual who has emotional attitudes and emotional maturities within himself. We know that the moment emotion is constructive, that it begins to change the chemistry of the whole body. Here we come again into our vibratory pattern. Emotions are a rate of vibration. This rate of vibration has several sub-rates, and these sub-rates of vibration specialize and divide the levels of emotional integrity. Therefore, every emotion affects health, affects body, and interferes with the growth of mind. The emotions, consequently, are here to be beautiful. They're here to be noble. The moment they fail to be that, the individual suffers, and where a large group of individuals make the same mistake, a world suffers. And out of this comes one of the problems of our time. We are always trying to find out, some way or other, some system to live by which is free from the stress and tension with which we are gradually becoming affected. We do not realize the fact that living is an art. Living is not a series of accidents. If it is, it's not worth much. Living is a problem of growing under discipline. The individual is here, as all creatures are. The animal is under discipline in another way. The animal seldom makes but one mistake. If it fails to keep the law of its kind, it ceases almost instantly. They have to be obeyed. Rules have to be kept. Now, the same is true with the vegetable kingdom. It has rules. And the mineral kingdom has rules. And the mysterious vibrations in space that are not allotted to known kingdoms have rules. And our emotional world is a vibratory rate containing within it a number of sub-vibratory patterns, each one of which is an emotion or a stress factor, and each one has its rules that must be obeyed or trouble starts. We are now living in a generation in which we are trying to escape in every way possible the realities of life. We are seeking to avoid the challenge of growth, and we are succeeding rather well in accomplishing this. But at the end of it, we're going to have chaos. We are beginning to see this coming along. We cannot explain why certain things are as they are. We develop all kinds of theologies to describe them. We know all kinds of politics systems to understand them, and all kinds of economic systems to pay for them. But at the end of it, we do not know why these rules exist. We do not know what they mean to the individual or to the commonwealth. What we do not realize is that we have only two choices: keep the rules or perish. This is something that is beginning to hurt a little bit. But this doesn't mean that we're all doomed to perish. Far from it. The percentage of perishing is going to be very slow and low. The real answer is that through various discomforts, we are gradually going to rise to the occasion and will finally place the constructive mind over the emotions and actions. And when the mind becomes a disciplinarian of emotion and action, it will not destroy either of them. Emotions will have their full manifestation. The hard-headed individual with no emotions is not a monument to progress. He is just one of the many mistakes. The individual is going to have mental discipline, but no one is going to know it except they need it. He is going to be able to think things through to protect the complete compound of his own bodily structure and the collective compound of society. So here we are gathering at the edge of this great transformation. We are gaining at the edge of the time when an invisible shift is taking place. We are moving inevitably from an emotional to a mental level. This does not mean that our emotions will be poorer, they will be richer. It means that the mind will then have the emotional instrument to work with, and that most of the beautiful things of life will be the result of the mind emotionalizing in the arts, in the ethics, in the idealism, and in human relationships. Now, if we don't do this, according to the magicians of the 18th and even 19th century, we're going to lose what we most cherish. I think that I remember quite well Andrew Jackson Davis, a physician in New England here in the early part of the 19th century. He was a physician psychic, and he had much to say about the world beyond and the world within. And he wrote a book called The Stellar Key to the Summerland. And to the spiritualist for a long time, the invisible world of the emotional life was the Summerland. It was a kind of a reward. It was like a summer vacation settlement. Everyone who had good emotions, kind heart, and good integrities, after passing on, dwelt in the summer land, where everything was beautiful, everything was fine, everyone was kind, and everything was noble. This type of thing, however, was one aspect. Now, this aspect could be built and developed within the mind of a person because he believed it, and also because in a certain way he may have lived it. If therefore the time comes for him to pass on and he is really what he claimed to be, he will be in a summer land. If his ethics and integrities are true, the after-death condition will be the fulfillment of his dreams and the reward of his virtues. But if it was all on paper or in the mind and never practiced, he will not have such a fortunate existence. For he will go where his actions go, and not where his hopes are. And in this we notice that almost all religions have a summer land. Every one of the great faiths of the world has spheres of rewards and punishments. Now the rewards and punishments have been exaggerated by various theological systems into vast fatalities. But what they really are steps in the attempt to mature these emotional and mental factors. Therefore, the initiation rites of ancient peoples had to do with the disciplining of life, not the destruction of it, not the changing of it, not even necessarily the changing of your religion. Because most people do not need to change their religion. What they need to do is change themselves until they keep their religion, until they really do what they claim to believe. So we go back to the snakes that are twisted around the flowers and realize that these snakes represent emotional compromises and temptations. The temptation is the beautiful flower. The individual reaches for it and gets bitten by the snake. And of course the snake becomes a symbol of karma. Having once bitten the individual, he must pay his debt to nature. This doesn't mean he's going to be destroyed, but it means that he's going to have to pay for being wrong. And most suffering that we have in the world is a result of paying for what is wrong. But in many cases, the payment is not heavy because the individual did not know. We are not punished desperately for things we do not know or do not understand. Our punishment is based upon the secret in within ourselves, in which we know in our heart of hearts that we did what was wrong. We have concealed it from everyone except the dweller in the self, and that we cannot fool. And it is that dweller in the self that sentences us to the punishment we deserve. It is not some cosmic factor out in space. We are not being punished for the fact that we were created, but we are being gradually penalized because we have not done better with the creation. We have not done anything with it to justify the tremendous evolutionary system that is behind us. Millions of years have been given to the making of a new order of life to which we belong. We have suffered and died for it many, many times. We have made all kinds of mistakes and paid for them. We are making new mistakes and will pay for them. But all the time there is a great plan unfolding. And for some reason or other, we have sort of lost the realization of that plan. As a result, we've had leaders arise who tried to remind us of it. We have had great teachers who were crucified and martyred in an effort to restore value. Now, what they were trying to restore was an exact code as it was applied to the astral body or emotional function of the human being. This emotional function involves appetites. It has to do with what we want and how we get it. Most of all, there is somewhere in all ulterior emotions this snake that is dangerous. There is always something that causes this plan to go awry. We gain all the favors of this world, but if we fail to attain the internal integration of ourselves, our life has been very largely a failure. So we have to think of this in the fact that we are trying to outgrow. In childhood, we stay with the parent and we grow as a little creature, and we grow as we can. Then comes the more or less early life, the above babyhood, in which we become physically adapted to the world in which we live. We learn to walk, we learn to talk, we learn to do the little things that small children do. And we also find a great deal of ulterior motive contributed to us by the very people who are our parents. Our parents themselves begin the process of corrupting us, usually. Not intentionally, but because they have not given proper concept or proper understanding to the responsibility of bringing a life into this world. So after a little while, this life enters the next path. It enters under the rulership of Mercury and goes to school. All right, that is part of it. School part is a very largely part of the vegetable kingdom. And most people who are in it today know that, but they don't know why, and they have no name for it. But they know something's wrong with it. They know that they have asked for bread and have been given a rock. The educational system in nature is beautifully related to the very early experiences of creatures. In nature, there is no converse. In nature, there is no disposing of knowledge. There is no sermonizing. There are no printed texts to go by. In nature, All learning is by observation. The new member of society learns what to do by copying the old member. The parent of the ancestral group becomes the textbook. It becomes the symbol of the knowledge necessary for the good life. If you look at it today and read the commentators in the paper, we realize that this textbook of the parental experience is not doing much for us because there's not much to it. We find out that the parental restraints have been reduced to practically nothing. And that we've had a bad failure in this in recent years. Even as late as the time when I was growing up, the family was far more important as an instructor. It was far more present as a disciplinarian of conduct than it is today. Today there is little or no discipline in most countries. A few that are still considered backwards still have a little honesty, but it is slipping fast. The next thing we have to realize is that the child, as after it learns by going to school, will must be prepared for the first step beyond schooling and what education should give him first of all. He should give that which is next. And if you go to the ladder of the stars, you find out what is next. For the next thing above the schooling is the discipline of self, the ability to know why you must keep the rules. And in most curriculum, they don't even teach the rules. But the purpose of education is to make possible a person can live according to the convictions of integrity, that he can learn from school what to do and what not to do, and can gain understanding and wisdom from the great encyclopedia of the world's past. All that has been will be, again, according to the law. So with this leadership, the educated person in school, he may go on being in school all the way through to maturity, but all the way along, the purpose of education is to transform growth processes into lawful and intelligent procedures. Therefore, the school system can continue. Most people entering adolescence are still going to school. Well, adolescence is under the planet Venus, the third of the mysterious factors involved in the ladder of the sages. And the ladder of the sages tells us that Venus is the basis of a love based upon value rather than upon birth. The signs of birth come under the rulership of the moon. The moon is the mother, and the Venus is the bride. It is the case where Venus becomes the symbol of the maturing of our relationship with other human beings. A man is the only creature that has been given the right to make this adjustment because it is next in the pattern of his own growth. His job now is to enlarge his concept of family. He started by believing in parents, if possible. He will go now further until the whole world is made up of his family. He is part of a world growth, and as such is also under the care and government of a world entity, which is sometimes called for short, for children, the guardian angel, or as the Babylonians called it, the essential daemon. All of the processes necessary to the individual, therefore, are administered by a power over the individual. This power is represented in various religions by teachers, saviors, sages, sacred institutions, and the mysteries of the development of the extrasensory band. All of these have to do with the preparation of the individual to become a member of the Commonwealth. There comes a time when it is his responsibility to settle down to the realization that there is no need for any dissension among human beings, that these so-called dissensions, these mysterious wars that we're suffering, this exploiting of each other, is all part of the mysterious astral light with the serpents around the flowers. We know that today we doubt the integrity of other people. We suspect ulterior motives. Well, the ulterior motives are the snakes, and they will be there as long as the individual is selfish. And he will be victim of ulterior motives as long as he cherishes them within himself. So out of these came also magic. Now magic is black and white. A white magic, according to the ancient records of the Egyptian and Babylonian Chaldean temples, white magic is the use of divine assets for the protection and preservation of all that lives. White magic can never be self-centered. It can never be the individual working solely for his own advancement. He advances not by trying, but by serving others. Growth is a byproduct of integrity. The integrity must come first, and it may not be rewarded in the lifetime of the person. On the other hand, the mistakes may be punished even while he is in this life. But anyway, we have this problem of integrities. We have this problem of magic. Now, magic was regarded as from the word magia, and the word implies actually illusion. The word merely means a fantasy. Imagination is a fantasy. An imagination is the visualization of something. Now, all